Are we living in the midst of an unbelieving and perverse generation? You know, in Luke 9:41, Jesus said to his own followers, "You unbelieving and perverse generation, how long shall I stay with you and put up with you?" And in Philippians 2:14, Paul said that the believers were to do all things without grumbling or disrupting so that they would prove themselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. Well, unfortunately, today we're no different. Easy electronic access to all sorts of perversions has fueled an ever-increasing cultural acceptance of perversion, and as a result, sexual abuse, and especially childhood sexual abuse, appears to be on the rise. Recognizing, responding to, and overcoming childhood sexual abuse. That's today's conversation on License to Parent. Well, hello and welcome to License to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy. Shepherd's Hill is a year-long Christ-centered residential program helping teens in crisis and, by extension, their families. I'm Rich Roslin. Our host is the founder and director of Shepherd's Hill, Trace Embry. And before we get into today's conversation, let me warn you parents that today's conversation will contain a rather sensitive topic, that of sexual abuse and specifically childhood sexual abuse. So this may not be appropriate for younger children who may be with you. So just make arrangements for that, and then please do join us for a most important, and I'm sure you'll find it, eye-opening conversation. And Trace, you know, I think that we all know more people than we care to admit who have been victims of childhood sexual abuse. Why do you suppose that so many people have kept this such a hush-hush thing for so long? I know in some cases we hear of issues of early childhood sexual abuse that don't get divulged until the victim is in his or her twilight years.
No, you know, I just talked to an 80-year-old lady who told me about an issue from her childhood. And it was the first time that she'd ever mentioned this to anyone. But to answer your question as to why people seem to be sharing these experiences more often these days, you know, even into their 80s, I think it's because our society has become a whole lot more comfortable with discussing sexual issues as a whole. I mean, you can't even watch a G-rated TV show without the commercials referring to topics that virtually nobody discussed publicly just a generation ago.
Right.
I like to watch NASCAR races and have to fast forward through the commercials.
Well, you got to fast forward past some of the cars that themselves are advertising certain products.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I suppose it could be argued that it's evidence that all things really do work out for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose. Because, you know, if the sexual revolution didn't do anything else, it allowed people, or should I say forced people in our society, and I'm thinking of Christians in particular, to have more open and regular discussions about sexual issues. It's a subject that certainly the Bible doesn't shy away from, but I think it's the kind of discussions we have about these issues that can either bring healing or hurt to folks, particularly for young, impressionable minds. Sex can be a beautiful thing or a dirty thing, sacrificial or selfish. And I think our society has acquired an appetite for dirty and selfish, unlike God intended it.
Yeah.
So considering the times that we live in, I think we need to have healthy discussions, have them often with our kids and as early as possible too, so that when perversion does come their way, and it will, they'll sense it for what it really is.
Yeah. Well, and to tag on to what you were just saying, when we have these early discussions, that doesn't mean that you talk about everything having to do with the subject with your four-year-old.
Right.
But you introduce these conversations and begin making it a natural part of conversation.
Exactly.
Well, speaking of natural and healthy conversations, in order to have today's conversation, I need to introduce our guest. Julie Woodley is a speaker, an author, and a counselor. In fact, she holds an MA in mental health counseling and a certificate in theological studies from Bethel Seminary. She's also completing her master's of theology and her chaplain training. So she's got a counselor's heart, quite obviously. As a survivor of numerous traumatic circumstances herself, Julie's story has been featured now on various radio and television programs, including Of Faith and Family, Focus on the Family, the Unshackled program from Pacific Garden Missions. She's been on Moody Radio, the 700 Club, Christian Television Network, Life Today, and so many more. And, of course, now Licensed to Parent. Julie has produced In the Wildflowers. That's a 10-part DVD series with accompanying written curriculum that's a tremendous resource for study groups of people who have experienced the pain of childhood sexual abuse. She has also produced Into My Arms, which is a series for those women and men who have suffered the pain of abortion. It's an attempt to lead these folks through a journey of forgiveness. She's authored and co-authored numerous books, including A Wildflower Grows in Brooklyn, which is Julie Woodley's story of healing and restoration, and a brand new, just released, 31-day devotional called Broken and Beautiful. Incidentally, you'll find both of those resources and many more on the Restoring the Heart Ministries website, which is rthm.cc.
Well, Julie, welcome back to the Licensed to Parent broadcast.
It is always a thrill to be with you, Trace, and really, really applaud you in your beautiful work at Shepherd's Hill Academy, and really excited to see how we can partner and work together more in the future.
Awesome. Yeah, I want to do that, Julie. And Julie, you're no stranger to childhood sexual abuse, both in your own childhood and the work you now do as an adult helping victims today. Can you give us a brief background about your own story and how God is using you now to bring healing to other folks?
Absolutely, yes. And thank you for those comments about kind of the awareness of sexual issues around the country. And I think one calling that I really have on my life and to teach others is to be able to speak up our stories. Mm-hmm. And when we speak up our stories of being sexually abused and also the healing that God has given us, it gives others permission and that opportunity to share their own stories and to know that they are not alone.
That's
and
right.
It really helps us lift the shame of our sexual abuse. And yes, at a very young age, I was sexually abused by my father and then some of the neighbor men. And then when I became a little older, probably around 15 or 16, my father would sell me to men that came into the community, and I was really a product of sexual exploitation. So on many, many levels, I was sexually abused. And at the age of 18, the day after I graduated from high school, I took every ounce of courage I had and left that mountain home in the mountains of Montana, got on a train, never to go back again. And I wish I could say that I, you know, stopped allowing the abuse to happen. I did not. I was in a chaotic cycle, and I didn't know how to say no to men. I didn't know how to protect myself, and I really didn't know who I was in God. So for the next 5 years, I lived a really wild life of drugs, alcohol, and promiscuity, and pretty much hit the streets of Minneapolis as a prostitute and lived that way for about 5 years.
Wow.
And was really honestly afraid of Christians, because if I said anything about my story, they would, you know, their eyes would glaze over, and I could tell that they were overwhelmed, and they would basically just walk away from me. And I felt like, you know, God has no purpose for me. So
wow.
Here I am, you know, in this little rooming house. I had enough money for a little room, and I was going to take my life. I had everything all set up. I had the bottle of pills. I had the whole night planned. When I was gonna kill myself, and I just began to pray, and I never really knew how to pray because I was raised in the Catholic Church and everything was in Latin, and I didn't understand the language. But I cried out to God that night, and I said, "Please help me." I had dug my fingernails into my hands till my hands were just bleeding. Now, I didn't even really understand what pain was anymore because I'd had so much.
Yeah.
But my hands were just bleeding, and I took that bottle of pills, I threw it in the waste paper basket, and I went to my bed, and I cried and cried and cried myself to sleep, and in the middle of the night, I heard a voice. And I knew I wasn't a schizophrenic. I'd never really heard voices before, but that voice said, "Julie, I love you." And it got louder and louder, and it just kept saying, "Julie, I love you." And all this hot love just ran through me, and that voice got so loud that it woke me up. And it continued to just plead with me to take in that love. And I decided right there I was going to look for who could ever love me. I was the worst of sinners. But I knew right there that someone out there loved me, and I was going to passionately find out who that was, or I should say more than that, that God passionately searched for me.
Wow. Has childhood sexual abuse gotten worse today, or is this something that's always been around and as common as today, we just never heard about it because of the mass media?
Oh, I definitely think it's always been there. I think we're just given the opportunity to speak about it. But I must say that the healing has gotten better. I love to see people being healed all over the country and beyond, both by my programs that I produce, but other places like Shepherd's Hill Academy that can really bring people in to help them heal from the trauma of childhood sexual abuse.
You were young when this started. Were you yet in your teenage years, or were you like 12, or when did this start for you?
No, it started when I was before kindergarten.
Oh, wow, yeah. Okay.
And I think there's a lot of people who don't realize how early this stuff happens. I'm talking bassinet stuff. I don't think people realize how early this goes on. And I think we need to blow a lid off that right now and let people know that, no, there are people out there who will do this.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I was just going to say, though, if it's something that you literally grew up with, if one of our listeners, you know, suspects something may be going on, some of these signs that we're talking about looking for may be harder to spot because, it, you know, now if it starts later on, I was thinking in your case, you mentioned being 15 or so when it got worse. Mm-hmm. But I was just curious if, you know, if a child is growing up with that, some of these things that you watch for may be more hidden, I would imagine.
Well, and in my case, because I was sexually abused at a very young age, and my parents were very wealthy and owned a lot of the town, and told me that, you know, if I was to tell anybody that they honestly would kill me.
Now,
so I was petrified to tell anyone, and I wouldn't make eye contact with people. I didn't want anybody to know.
What's the first thing a parent needs to do if they suspect that their child is going through this, or maybe the child makes a claim against a babysitter or a family friend? What's the parent's next move?
Well, I think, it always depends on the child and how they express themselves, but I think it's important to, you know, gently just to, you know, take the child away from the home and just, you know, just start to have some conversation. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I kind of use, honestly, when I'm having a conversation with a child, even a young adult, I will talk about myself and that I was sexually abused and I was afraid to tell anybody or tell another story. I always like to use other stories to not help that person feel, you know, kind of in the spotlight.
Hmm.
You know, I heard this program. You know, this woman was abused as a young child. She couldn't tell anybody. Do you ever feel like you can't? Are there some things that you can't talk about? Just a little side note, I am making a trauma toy to be able to help children and young adults be able to express themselves through a toy, but also through books and media and videos. So to be able to help them express themselves, because often those that have been sexually abused become very shy, very withdrawn.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want anybody to know because we've been set up by the perpetrator that if anybody finds out, we're the one that's going to get it. We're the one that's going to get in trouble. We're the one that is going to be jeopardized in their life. It's kind of like there's a big elephant in the living room, and the elephant is making a great big mess all over all over the place. No one's talking about the elephant, but the person that talks about the elephant and says, "Does anybody see that elephant in the living room? Does anybody see the sexual abuse that's going on in that home?"
Yeah.
They become the target of
I know of a particular case in which a person came forward as an adult to talk about childhood sexual abuse and told her mother that she had been abused by one of her uncles, you know, the mother's brother. And it didn't destroy the relationship between the mother and the daughter, but the mother was then put in a very hard place because, you know, this is her brother whom she's loved and trusted all of her life, and her daughter who she's raised and loved and trusted all of her life, and now there's a big dilemma. Who do you believe?
And that was going to be my next question. What if the perpetrator is a close family member, like a sibling or maybe the other parent?
What happened with me is when I, you know, of course, my story is rather public, but when my story became more public, well, you know, I'm totally disowned from my family. I have no contact with them. I've tried, but they don't want to have any contact with me.
Yeah.
They've totally disowned me, and of course my children as well, which is really breaks my heart.
Was your mom?
I have my mother's only grandchildren, but she's chosen not to have anything to do with me because I spoke about it. Now, I don't typically say, you know, where I'm from or my maiden name or anything like that, but that's often what, unfortunately, that is sometimes the case if the person that has done the abuse or the family member that has done the abuse isn't willing to fess up and say, yes, I did this, and have some kind of transformation, we become the target of the accusations. But it's important that we stand up and walk away from abuse. And it's also important for me that I not allow my children to be in that environment at all. I was very adamant as a mother, not to allow them to be abused in any way, shape, and form.
Right. Was your mom aware of the abuse that was going on while it was happening? Something you said earlier made me think that perhaps she was.
I do believe that she was aware of all of it.
Okay.
And that she was really just trying to protect the image of the family.
Yeah.
Like I said, they owned, you know, a lot of the town. Everything was about image, how you looked. So, yes, I was absolutely sure that she was.
Let me jump in here real quickly. Our guest today on Licensed to Parent is speaker, author, counselor, and media producer Julie Woodley. You'll find her many books, including A Wildflower Grows in Brooklyn, which is her story of healing and restoration, and her newest 31-day devotional, Broken and Beautiful, at the Restoring the Heart Ministries website, which is rthm.cc. Now, that's not .com, but rthm.cc. CC. We need to take a quick break on behalf of our stations. We'll be back with more right after this.
Everywhere we go, we're surrounded by screens. Have we entered into a techno-utopia?
Or a virtual prison?
Prison. Is our social experience richer and deeper? Or more shallow?
And artificial.
Discover insightful answers to these questions in the documentary DVD, Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture. You'll learn from media experts, church leaders, and inspiring individuals and families from across the country, including Trace Embry and students from Shepherd's Hill Academy. Most importantly, you'll discover how God's Word addresses the unique media challenges we face today. Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture. Available in the store at licensedtoparent.org. Proceeds benefit the Shepherd's Hill Academy Scholarship Fund.
Hi, this is Ravi Zacharias. It really is such an honor to come alongside Shepherd's Hill Ministries and Licensed to Parent. I remember talking to somebody in the entertainment world once who said their entire target audience was an 18-year-old and typically an 18-year-old male. They said the influence they wield in a culture around with their friends is enormous. So a ministry like this, to rescue those who have been seduced along the way, I cannot say how important this is. And to get behind a ministry like this, one will find the rewards to be extremely powerful in changing society.
With the generous gifts from people just like you, we're able to provide parents with practical insights to navigate the challenges families face in today's culture, as well as helping troubled teens in our year-long residential program. To learn more and to donate, visit licensedtoparent.org.
Well, Welcome back. This is Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long program working with troubled teens and, by extension, their families. If you're just joining us, our guest today is Julie Woodley, and we are talking about the content of some of her books, but more specifically about the overarching topic of childhood sexual abuse. So, again, if you are just joining us, this program would not be suitable for young children, so you might ask them to leave the room. Julie, you have been working through Restoring the Heart Ministries with a lot of individuals and groups of people who've gone through sexual abuse, and specifically childhood sexual abuse. What kind of success rate are you seeing with these former victims in their being able to recover from this and to get past it and to grow?
That's a great question. Thank you so much. You know, it's interesting that you asked that. I was at a conference not too long ago, and a person that was not a Christian was giving the statistics and kind of the research background of those who have been sexually abused, and she basically said there's really no hope for healing. You know, they're basically going to be, you know, they're going to have to live with this severe trauma their whole lives and the after effects of that for themselves and for their family members, and give a pretty dismal report. And everything within me was like, no, that's not true. Those of us who have had incredible healing and a great support system around us, but more than that, the love and the incredible encounters with God, just the desperate plea to Him to help us heal and be restored, we can be, and I've seen it over and over and over again, myself and others included, other stories that I'm hearing, you know, honestly, throughout the country and other countries from, you know, the program that I wrote in the Wildflowers, but I'm hearing stories, you know, daily, like tons of stories daily, about incredible healing and restoration. So awesome. I'm just saying that, yes, there is incredible healing and restoration. And it's been interesting to watch, too, because it's kind of like the deeper the trauma, the deeper still the joy, mm-hmm. and the deeper still the restoration and the transformation. So it's not equal, it's more.
Amen.
Which is really a statement of the glory and the healing of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
The grace of God, too. When there are cases of incest in the home between two siblings, what should be wise protocol for the parent when it comes to ever leaving those two siblings alone?
Well, I'm just going to be honest, too. That was also my story. My brother also sexually abused me, which, unfortunately, my parents probably, you know, didn't see it or didn't really care. But, yes, I think that they're definitely, especially if one of the siblings is older, whether it be a girl or a boy, and they're really victimizing and bullying that child, more than anything, the victim in that situation, they very much need to be listened to and taken very, very seriously. Now, not in a way that you're going to scare both of the kids, but to really help the parent understand that child, it has enough courage to be able to speak it out. They need to be protected in every way, shape, and form from further abuse.
Yeah. What percentage of American kids today would you say are victims of sexual abuse?
Well, statistics show that one out of every three women has been sexually abused in some way, shape, and form by the time they are 18 years old.
Wow.
And statistics show that one out of every six young boys is sexually abused by the age of 18 in some way, shape, and form. Now, it's harder to say with boys because, honestly, boys don't often talk about it. I think there's often more shame involved with boys that have been sexually abused, especially if they've been sexually abused by a female or by a male. So those statistics are, you know, they fluctuate, of course, but
yeah.
The statistics are quite high.
I'm curious about this, especially with the amount of sexual material that floats around in our culture these days. We already know that young teens are, you know, hormonally amped up, and so interest in sexuality is already there. Experimentation happens, and more openly now. How do you draw the lines of demarcation between sexual abuse and mutual sexual experimentation? And I'm not justifying it between teens, but I'm just saying, you know, if you have two teenagers who are experimenting, you know, the law may say if you're under 15, that's statutory rape. How do you see it in your ministry as what is actually a case of two teens willfully experimenting versus one abusing the other?
Well, I think that really, you know, depends on the one that's feeling like they're not, it's unwanted. If it's an unwanted sexual advance and they are saying no, and the person continues to push, if they feel pushed, then it is unwanted, and unfortunately, it can escalate.
Sure.
It can then become rape.
Well, let me jump in here because our time is almost up for today, so we need to say goodbye. Our guest today on Licensed to Parent has been speaker, author, counselor, and media producer Julie Woodley. You'll find her many books on the Restoring the Heart Ministries website. And let me give that to you one more time, RTHM, Restoring the Heart Ministries, RTHM.cc, not .com, but .cc. And Julie, real quickly before we go, you are, I understand, working on a new project with David Nixon, the producer of Fireproof and Facing the Giants and whatnot. Can you tell us about that and when we might be able to see it?
Yes, we are working on a film curriculum much like In the Wildflowers for really men and women that have been sexually exploited to be able to heal. Now, that is part of my story, but more than that, the glory of God and His healing is part of my story. I wish I could say that it would be done tomorrow. We are now in the fundraising stage. So if anybody feels it in their heart to help us raise funds for that, it's about $500,000, but we're almost done with the first story. Her name is Tina. She was sexually exploited at the age of 4. Her mother was a prostitute and sold her into trafficking at the age of 4. And that piece alone can be used in safe homes, places where people have been sexually exploited. So we would love to say that that will be done next month, but it could take a while with the fundraising. But we are hoping, praying, that in the next year and a half, we will have that finished and ready to go and send out.
Excellent.
You know, to places
awesome.
All over the globe.
Well, hopefully we can have you back on about that time, and we'll talk specifically about that. Once you've got the rest of it done and once somebody's dug into their change drawer and pulled out that $500,000 that you need.
That's right.
Julie, thanks so much for being on Licensed to Parent this week.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the beautiful work you're doing.
Well, that is all for this week on Licensed to Parent. We do remind you that stress and trauma in a child's life affects the entire family. And at times, the child and the family need to work through it all. Now, Shepherd's Hill Academy has been helping hurting teens and hurting families for more than 20 years. Folks dealing with all sorts of issues, including childhood sexual abuse. And that work is not possible without the generosity of our friends. The cost of residential care is very expensive, and quite frankly, many families don't even have the resources to pay for it. That's why we come to you from time to time here on this program asking for your help. Your tax-deductible gift to the Shepherd's Hill Scholarship Fund can help change a child's life and the family's life eternally. If you'd like to learn more, please visit our website. It's licensedtoparent.org, and then click where it says donate at the top of the page. Again, licensedtoparent.org. For our host, Trace Embry, I'm Rich Rosl, inviting you back again next time for more common sense, Christ-centered talk and for a chance to renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless you. We'll see you next time.